welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reed. The feedback you have been sharing from last week's episode with Ade Energy have just been beautiful. Thank you. It's such a pleasure to hear how these conversations are landing with you. And I had a quick peek at my listener count. I get to see how many people have downloaded and listened to the episode. And I last checked, it was 26,000 of you, which is quite profound for a podcast that I have self-produced in my home with no funding, no nothing. I just decided to start talking and interviewing people. It's just a testament to the guests, really. And I guess I really want to honour them because it's not scripted. I am not sending my guests a list of questions that I'm going to ask them before. We book a date and we show up and we just test that the sound is working and we roll. Whatever comes up, comes up. And that's what's been captured. Very little content editing goes on in our conversations. It's just raw and it's honest. And I think that's probably what, you know, perhaps resonates with you so much. Just the humanity of the conversations that we're having, the honesty, the joy, the pain, the vulnerability, and, you know, the opportunity to speak our truth. And so thank you to my guests for allowing me to hold space for them in that way so that you can almost eavesdrop. I recognise that it's difficult. It's not easy being vulnerable at the best of times in front of one person, let alone at the prospect of having 26,000 people tuning in. So I just want to honour the courage that it takes my guests to come and share with me in this way, because I think that's what has been making this podcast so well received by you. So yeah, just a short moment to honour that. Also a huge thank you to my patrons. Again, this podcast is just being produced in my home with doorbells ringing, my husband chatting. I mean, I don't know why men are so loud on the phone. Why are they so loud? Yes, I'm making a generalisation, but, you know, getting to grips with working together and, you know, it's imperfect. So thank you to my patrons for the support, because it does help me being able to outsource the editing, and it just helps them be more sustainable. And I very much hope to be able to do season two for you, because I have to let you know, after today's episode, there's just two left and season one will be ending. No booze, no sadness. You lot, I have a book to write and my publisher will not be thrilled if I miss my deadline. But in all seriously, it's coming to a natural end. And I very much hope to be able to bring you season two in autumn. So if you do find these conversations really of value and you want to support my work in a way that feels accessible, then becoming a podcast patron is one of those ways, and it will help me be able to make sure that season two can continue. So as ever, I'll leave a link in the profile for you to find out more about that. So this episode, Janelle, I mean, there's so much gold here. So it's with Janelle Lewis, who is a yoga teacher. And Janelle and I had the pleasure of meeting at an event for International Women's Day a couple of years ago. And we'd never met before. And it was like catching up with an old friend. Now, Janelle is a yoga teacher extraordinaire. And I say that because she is one. She has bum and boobs and spirit and she does not mince her words. Now and I'm not going to go into it now because we dive into this in more depth in our conversation, but the amount of racism and undermining that Janelle experiences because she is a black woman and she's a woman with curves, smashing stereotypes in the wellness and yoga industry, some of what she's subjected to and the violence she's subjected to. We really do talk about this. So Janelle and I are hilarious. We'll just leave voice notes with each other on a regular basis, and we won't even say we won't even say hello or good morning. We'll dive straight into talking about the white supremacy that she or I have experienced. But in all seriousness, what I love about hearing more about Janelle's story is how she came to find yoga in an industry that really currently, and I will say in the West, because yoga at its essence is very different to yoga in the West, and we talk about this in the podcast, but an industry that doesn't always speak to the people who would benefit from its practice the most. An industry that sometimes feels exclusive and elitist. But how she found yoga in its essence, at its core, was fundamental to supporting her mental health, her physical well-being, but also her life force, and the very essence of yoga practice. If people are practicing yoga in its essence, then you wouldn't see so much violence in the wellness industry if people were practicing at its essence beyond this performative way. It's so fascinating. It's such a rich conversation. There's no need for me to talk any further. I'm just going to go straight over to the episode. As ever, let us know what you think at Nova Reed Official. Enjoy. Welcome back. I have a slight confession to make that this incredible guest, we have had a conversation before, and I had another technology fail, but it means I get to speak to her again and we have got fire in our bellies. Welcome, the wonderful Janelle Lewis. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Nova. It's good to be back again. But again,
for those who don't know, Janelle is a yoga extraordinaire and she is just absolute fire. So Janelle, actually, why don't you play along with me? Tell everybody who you are beyond your roles.
So first and foremost, I'm a mother. That is my hardest role, favorite role, hardest role. I have a 15-year-old daughter, Francesca, and she's the light of my life. Everything I do, sometimes it's misguided, but everything I do is you know, like I was a crazy black mom, is for my daughter. And I love her, and she is the light of my life, and is really my heart's deepest purpose. You know, that's one of my deep purposes is mothering her and stewarding her into her adulthood as a black woman. I'm also a student of, you know, the yoga teacher. I am a student of yoga, student of spiritual practices and movement practices. And I am, again, I like to use this word, a seeker of my own truth, and a seeker of universal truth. So that's it.
I love you, Janelle, so much. So give the people who are tuning in a bit of a flavor of who you are. Where did you grow up and what was that like? I don't want to put words in your mouth because I know your story. So yeah, where did you grow up and what was that like as a black woman?
I grew up in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia, to get really specific. I grew up in a matriarchal family, so the women ran the show. It's funny, yesterday was Mother's Day, American Mother's Day, and and I really tuned into that energy of why I move the way I move sometimes. Ooh. And my growing up, it was like we were a very church-going family, church every Sunday, involved in the community with our neighbors, on our block in our neighborhood, and also education was the thing in my house. You know, you educate yourself, whatever it is that you want to do, because people did many things, but you go to school and you learn and you get this education, because if you have knowledge that this is something drilled into me, no one can take that away from you. Mm. In this life, especially as living in black and brown bodies, there's a lot that can happen. But education was really prized in my household. And I realized that that's, you know, even now in this quarantine, and I'm like, quarantine, you don't have to do anything. But I'm even doing another teacher training during the quarantine. Because I got that whipped in me, like, all right, so what you going to do? I'm just going to sit here twiddling your thumbs. You better learn something. You know, might as well, since you're here. And I have the capacity to do that, right? Some folks, like, I'm not having to homeschool my daughter. Yeah. So let's hold that up. Thank God. I pray for the mamas that do. Oh, it'd be bad if I did. So I grew up in a family that, and also working, you know, school was my work at that time. You know, my mother was a labor union organizer and advocate for workers' rights. And that had a deep effect on me. Also political organizing. So that had a deep effect on me growing up. And I always have to shout it out. And this, because it is, you see, I get all excited. I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., which is an all black school.
I was just going to say, everyone needs to just hear this. Just pause for a minute. Pause for a minute, because this does not exist in the UK. Howard University is an all black university. Just let that land. And especially to my black and brown listeners, imagine what kind of experience and what kind of impact that would have had on your self-worth being in that environment. So tell us more.
Supremely. And it's so funny. I have to really honor this woman. Her name is Eleanor Jean Henley. And I'm going to send this to her because she had this group called Teen Shop. And it was for girls from the age of 13 to 19. And we would go every week. I mean, every other week. And they would teach us things just like how to be a good human.
Oh, wow.
You know. Hair, nails, political organizing, money management, and women were, you know, and it was mainly black women. They were the mentors and they were organizing. So Ms. Henley took us on college tours because she didn't necessarily say, well, you have to go to college, but it's like, you got to go somewhere. You got to do something. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, even if it's vocational school, she had people from vocational school come and talk to us. So she took us to Howard University on a tour, and it wasn't really on my radar to go to a black school. I didn't really know what that meant. And I went, I was like, oh, I'm coming here. Because I just got there, and I went, I just felt, I was like, this is what I need. I said, I don't need any more of, you know, because also there's this thing about, and we'll go into it, is that the white thing is the better thing. So you need to go to this white school to be competitive. You know, why would you, you know, and that, you even have like a lot of black people saying things like that. And I went there and I said, listen, Miss Henley has been around everywhere. And if she thinks it's important to bring us places like that, I said, I think I'm going to be all right. And I went to Howard, and it was one of the cornerstone decisions I've made in my life. Like, it has been a big rock, and they call Coward the capstone, like the rock, like the beginning stone. Mm-hmm. And that is what it's been in my life. So I'm still friends with loads of our people. We always give each other love and shout outs and, you know, and things. And yeah, so that, and it was amazing because I could be Jonelle. I didn't have to be like the, you know, the tick box or the anything except for who I was and what I was working with as a person, as a young woman, you know, or as a, you know, a teenager stepping into womanhood. And it literally has been life-changing. I would not be who I am without that, without my, you know, growing up with my family, all those strong Black women in my family, I could not be who I am.
So, honestly, I've got so much goosebumps, and I'm so pleased you had that experience, because you only know too well that it's not common for many of us, but oh, it just gives me goosebumps just hearing you talk about it. So thank you for sharing that. And what do you think going to university like Howard and growing up in that matriarchal family did for your sense of self?
I mean, there were certain things that, I mean, I was aware of, like, you know, I was really raised with a very even tone around race and racism, and that it was there. But equally, you know, I had access to the richness of the Black experience. Mm. I remember like having the magazines and like, you know, making like cutting out pictures of Iman, right? And Beverly Johnson. And those were in the house. Like we had Jet, we had Ebony.
Mm.
And it was, you know, that stuff was there. You know, we had the Nikki Giovanni books and the Maya Angelou, and it wasn't, you know, Zora Neale Hurston. I didn't have to look far to see me.
Mm.
You know, I like, you know, we always had the Cosby Show on when it came on. Was it Thursday night at 8 o'clock? Like, it was like, we gonna watch, and whether you like it or not, Jonelle, we're gonna watch this show. And it was just this real sense of, you know, I grew up in a Black neighborhood, and it was lower middle class, I have to say, but it wasn't, you know, it was a loving upbringing. It wasn't, I knew what the challenges were, but I felt like I was raised to be able to meet them.
Oh, lovely.
And, you know, and that was that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that really was that. I was taught, I'm like, annoyingly so, you are beautiful, you're smart, you're capable. I couldn't come home with no mess. They're like, you know, what is this? Like, you can do that. You know, it was always, you are innately, you have, you're talented. Mm. You know, my dad is like, my dad, who I love, he's amazing. And he's the spiritual side of me. My dad is the spiritual seeker too. And he's like, you're young, Black, and gifted. And that is how I was raised.
Mm.
It was fundamentally, it was how it was, that was the foundation. So when you go out into the world and you know, you get the knocks and you get the hits and you get the things, it's like, okay, well, they did tell me it was going to be like this, but I'm going to keeping on, mm-hmm. you know? And it made me, I was a fighter. If something wasn't fair, I'm going to tell you. I'm like, this isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had that sense of being able to do that, which can put me in a couple awkward positions. Cause I'm like, well, you know, this isn't right. And I'm going to tell you why. However, you know, we need truth speakers in this life.
Yeah. So that moves me. I mean, I'm easing you in, but Jonelle and I are going to be talking about white supremacy in the wellness industry, just to ease you in. But can you... We have these WhatsApp chats that go on for days talking about white supremacy. They're just so open and honest and just freeing. But before I get there, I want to ask you how you found yoga. What made you decide that this was something that you wanted to do?
So my first ever yoga class was at Howard University.
Howard again?
Howard forever. I did it, and what I remember about that was the sense of expansiveness I felt in the Shavasana, the sheer space of it. I remember how I felt after doing, we had some Swami guy come in. It was fantastic. I was in this Black Honor fraternity and they got this guy and we did it. And I felt this like sense of expansiveness and this sense of peace. Fast forward, I'm pregnant with my daughter and I started doing yoga and like pregnancy yoga, then any yoga class that I could get to because it was making me feel better. I felt in touch with my body. And I could feel like my daughter was like happy when I was doing it. Why? Because her mom was happy and it really helped to, you know, I was active right up until the end, like literally did a 90-minute yoga practice 2 days before I went to labor. Mm. And again, it was this sense of, again, this sense of space. Mm. And we moved forward again. I had a baby and couldn't really barely manage to make a shower. So going to yoga classes or any sort of fitness, that was in the back burner for a while. And then we moved forward to when I was getting a divorce from my daughter's father and I was in a deep depression. My life had literally fallen apart. And I didn't feel good. I felt awful. And I had a friend that said, you know, you have to get yourself together. You and she, I went to Howard with her. And she wasn't being mean, but she was like, you know, with the real take home now on the other side of it is that no one is coming to rescue you. You have to do rescuing yourself. Yeah. You have to do this. You have to do it. And I'm like, oh, I don't feel good. I need to feel better. Mm. Yoga. It came right into my head and I started to go to any little yoga class I could get to. And I was like, I feel better. Okay. This is, and things are starting to make more sense. And I began to start to unpick things and untangle things. And there was a direct correlation to how I became more organized in my body and in my mind. And how it translated into my life. Mm. And how I was able to meet the challenges that were coming at me is becoming, you know, I moved to the UK. I moved to London with my ex. Mm. He was, that was it. And I'm moving away from that. And I'm in a foreign country. And the yoga supported that for me. And during that time, a little voice in my head said, you should teach this. Mm. And I said, okay, without much thought, and went to India to do a yoga teacher training in 2014.
And you haven't looked back?
Never, never, never. And literally, and this, whoever else is listening, I've never had a chance to voice this. That quiet voice in your head, that quiet one, you know the one. The one that doesn't shout, the one that doesn't berate. If it's telling you to do something, please listen to it. Mm. It could be the most crazy thing ever. Because subsequently, people thought I was nuts going to do this yoga, leaving, going to India. Thought I was absolutely crazy, ridiculous. How could I make money doing something like this? Who even does this? What is it? Is a cult? So many crazy things. And also, how's this black woman going to make this yoga? Because we don't see no skinny, we only see skinny blondes. Who are you? What are you going there to do? Who's going to employ you? It was so much of that. Now, unbeknownst, because I was in my zone, I didn't hear that noise. But I'm just a testament to say, that quiet voice, you go listen to it. Don't listen to nobody else because, and it was, and I had a single purpose. I'm like, I need to teach this.
Yeah, it was a calling.
Because people need to learn from it. The people, somebody, somewhere needs to see me and learn a something from me.
Yeah.
So there we go.
I first met, well, Janelle and I first met at an event called Women of the World Festival, where Janelle was doing these, what do they call them? They weren't yoga.
They called them energizers. They called them the energizers and grounders and, you know, just to get people moving. Yeah. And And so because there was a lot of talking.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I want to correct, it was spirit forward with the Bacardi people. I haven't been privileged enough to ask to be invited to Women in the World, but that's on my list, y'all. Anybody for Women of the World?
Is that what I said? Girl. Is that what I said? Women of the World Fest. I mean, it was for, yeah, it was, so I'm getting confused, because it was for forward. International Women's Day.
National Women's Day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for correcting
but
me.
But I wanted to just correct it because people are like, well, y'all know you ain't been invited. I haven't,
you know what?
Not yet, but one day.
Let that news to happen. Coming. But I remember because it was the first time, I think it was the first time I had ever seen a black female yoga teacher. I'd seen black men, I'd had classes with black men, I'd had classes with Asian men and women, but I remember seeing you and thinking it was the first time I'd seen a black female yoga teacher who looks like a normal human being with bums and boobs, and it was just... Well, we just clicked that day, didn't we? It was like we've been friends for ages.
Oh, no,
and it was just glorious to just the way you hold space. I mean, you know, we'll give you ways in which you can follow Janelle afterwards and just see how wonderful her practice is and the way she delivers. And I can absolutely see why it's your calling and why someone like you in an industry that is so whitewashed and often only depicts wellness as something that's available for skinny white middle class women, why having someone like you there and somebody who's had the grounding and the foundation at Howard to withstand the white supremacy that you face, not just in the industry but from people who come to your class and undermine the work because of what you look like. I mean, we'll go on. So, yeah, what are some of the ugly glazes that you've discovered and how do you move through that?
So, very quickly, I want to be really fair because I think when we're having these conversations, and I know you know this, Nova, I am speaking from a place of love
of
and
course.
A place of deep pleasure and resource. Because if I don't, I can't do this work.
Same.
I can't do this work out of anger. I can't. I'll run out of esteem actually, everything being from a place of anger
it's toxic.
Undermines the work.
It's toxic and it's
toxic.
It turns itself inwards on your body. We know this. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I am like, happy, well, and free, and saying all that, my first experience of group yoga, we're in a studio in South London at Breeze Beckenham, and I want to acknowledge them because I was going there and doing it and never felt any way about me being there because they had all types of teachers there and all sorts of practitioners there. So I never even felt like it was not a thing that I was there.
Yeah.
Everyone was kind. Everyone was all different, you know, different ways. They had different sorts of people on the reception desk. They had different teachers, older, younger, you know. So I was there and I was very held and they were like behind me. Going to do the teacher training, they employed me after I came back.
Nice.
So I have to like give it up because there you people can do it. They you can do that. You the people that you know you can hold people. And so this is a studio that did it. When I got to my teacher training, rude awakening.
Whoa.
Literally, I mean, I I was like the oldest, one of the oldest people there. And I was only 36 at the time.
Mm.
One of the oldest.
Wow.
Let's just sit with that. You know, and I'm not saying that age necessarily means wisdom. I'm not saying that. However, literally the oldest, like the granny. I was the And it was another woman. I think there were three of us out of about almost 30, we did have kid children. three of us had children. So I'm just framing how young everyone was, right? And then we get to the point that I was the only woman of color.
Wow.
Only woman of color, only person of color. There was a woman, and she is my friend. She is half Chinese, but she would call herself white passing. Mm. That's what she would say. You know, she has, and it's not like she wasn't raised, but you wouldn't necessarily, she's just like another
white person. She presented as white, yeah.
She presents as white. Now, when you speak to her, it's a different thing, but out of it, so you would just look, and it's just like, out of that many people, and then it again, it was third of delineation, super thin. There are quite a few people that have eating disorder situations happening there, and that's another kind of can of worms. But all of this going on, and I'm there, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And I really held myself, and I said, I am not turning into a teenager here. I am here to learn. I am not here for these people to validate me. If I get into that game, I will lose. I cannot play their game because their game is set up for me to lose. Everyone, no one was bad, or, you know, the normal dynamics will play out in these sorts of trainings where there's stuff that is coming up from people. But I got a very, I knew, I'm like, I'm the odd one out here. Okay, because I'm not, you know, because even in my body, it's like, I'm just a normal woman. Like, I have boobs, I have a bum. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And I haven't, you know, and I wasn't, you know, there to change what my body was. I was there to learn. And, you know, it was a feeling that, you know, I wasn't treated badly, but I was like, I didn't fit in. And their expectation of my ability was so low.
Wow.
So low. So low. And all I could mark it up to was that they felt, because I was black, brown, and that I didn't have this starved body. Mm. And I'm going in there. Starved by, because that's what, for me to look like them, that's what I would have to do. That I wasn't worthy or smart or should be, in the end, up in front of people teaching this practice.
They didn't think you were capable.
No, and just by virtue of how I look. Yeah. And then in the interactions, it was like, everybody's just like, always surprised, always surprised, always surprised. And that shit gets a little tiring. It's like, I am a intelligent human being. Like, why are you surprised about
your ability? Me. Yeah, and that surprise, that element of surprise, carried through to you working in some studios as well.
Listen, no fun. I sat there and I swallowed it, and I'll say, you know, I have a calling, and that calling could not be ignored. I even sometimes I'm like, oh, and the voice is like, listen, I've told you, so you gotta go into it. It's no, you know, and it's you have to be here and you have to do it. But the amount of support that I got as a new teacher compared to what my classmates got, people that had the same, they had no more experience than me, no more experience than me, no more connection to these folks than I did. And they were getting slots immediately. And why? Because they were white and blonde.
So what are you saying?
They did
what, it. Give me that in, give us context. What did that look like?
Context. So they were getting jobs. They were getting studio classes. immediately upon returning from the training.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because they already knew someone at the mm-hmm. studio and they had a relationship with them, or they were, had been working at the studio as a receptionist and now came back and they were like, hey, this is like off the street. okay, you have the look, we're going to employ you. And also in networks, because we did have a network of people from our yoga school, it was very much, it's the typecast, it's the casting. Okay, she has the look, yeah. We'll employ her. Does she really know what she's talking about?
Mm.
Is she embodying the practice?
Yeah.
Is she a good teacher? And I'm not talking about any of my teacher colleagues necessarily their abilities. I can't, I won't go there. But I was definitely like, oh wow, how are you gonna make this work? Because again, it was very glaring mm-hmm. that, they got the red carpet treatment walking into places, and I literally and I say it, I had to go through the back door.
Mm.
My career I have built it on having to go through the back door.
And did that
everywhere?
Did that ever make you question whether or not this was sustainable or the trajectory for you in those early days?
I didn't question it. I just,
you were just focused.
I was focused, but also this knowing again from growing up of how it is for black and brown people, how we have to be like twice as good. And I think, fundamentally that is very damaging and very violent mm-hmm. because it takes so much effort and resource to be able to do that. However, I did. I was single-minded. They call it an echo grata, a single point of focus in yoga, and I had it. And I would not let anyone dissuade me because I knew what I have is of value.
Yeah.
My experience, what the practice did for me, women, and I wasn't even coming from a black woman. I'm like, women need to hear these messages.
Mm.
Women need to know that there is a healing that you can get and that you can give yourself that no one can take away from you.
Because you went through that own experience yourself.
Yeah.
And it was profoundly powerful. And for me, what I find makes yoga so exclusive at the moment is that it is, in its essence, about collective healing, isn't it? Collective wellness, in its essence. But it's got lost somewhere along the way. And those who need to access healing and be resourced and wellness are often the ones that either can't access it because price points are inaccessible, or it doesn't feel like a safe space. Or people just don't want to do it because they're sick and tired of it being appropriated, or all of the above.
I think that you've hit so many points, Nova. Just the things that we're confronted with. I will speak to mainstream yoga in the studios in London. Because that is where I worked. I can't talk about anywhere else. And I will always frame it with, this is my direct experience.
Yeah.
I know that there are so many. I know that there are loads of black and brown yoga teachers, holistic practitioners, people that work in wellness, and they are out working in communities, working with people, even in you, Nova, I would consider, you are here and you're working and you are working to make people well, because white supremacy and white privilege is a sickness. It is a sickness.
It is.
I'm laughing, but I'm laughing because Janelle's come right up close to the camera. She's not playing.
It's a sickness.
I talk about it like racism is a virus, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's a disease.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. And in healing, you know, I feel like we're all healing ourselves from it. So there are people in the communities and they're doing their work and they do it. And I'm talking about in more of these more mainstream spaces, these bigger studios, the people that have these bigger, you know, budgets and they're running it as, you know, kind of a more corporate size. Yeah. And that is more what I, I can't really, convey why I ended up in some of those places. I think it's just the way that it happened. That's where I got some of the opportunities, and that's where, you know, I went for it. But literally, I would teach anywhere. I would go anywhere in London and teach because it was my passion. But in some of these, you know, the places I know, you know, I got in and it felt a little frosty. It felt a little cold, you know, going in. And I, again, can be so single-minded about things. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm teaching. I'm going to get up here and teach it.
Yeah. But you know what I love about that, Janelle, is that it doesn't, I mean, there might be moments, but you're not unwavered. I can be, not so much now, but definitely in my 20s and early 30s, I would be moved by that. That would make me question myself. That would make me lack confidence in my ability.
I'm not saying I didn't question myself. Mm. I questioned a lot of things, and I went in, I felt like, well, I'm gonna do this my way. When I looked around at what different people were doing, and I'm like, well, I feel like it's room for me to be me. I don't have to like pretend to be this other person because it's like, well, they're them and I'm me. So I would go in and be playing my Jay-Z and Kanye West and Beyonce and whoever else I decided to put on the playlist today. And I would get some looks.
Of course.
I would get some looks. I even got some complaints. Complained about me. And what I felt, and this was like, I was a baby teacher. And when you are a baby teacher, like, and it was, again, another lay of heart for me because in the spaces, there weren't so many other black teachers, other black women that I knew. So a lot of stuff I had to like really sit with myself and really realize what was going on. And I'm like, it's because I'm not white and it's difficult for them. And that's okay. And it's because, you know, I speak with this voice. And I'm not trying to make it smaller or package it in a way that's maybe
palatable.
Palatable for them. I am not trying to do that because literally yoga gave me my voice back. So I can't really do that for you anymore. And it was so bugged for me because I'm like, this practice works from the inside out. I am merely doing these yogic practices, and this is what is here from that. And you don't think that that's right. And I knew. I said, "This is. There is something going on here, and it's worth my attention to see what's happening here." Because I was from the thing. It's like, well, we're all here doing these practices, right? We're all here doing this yoga. We're all here doing this healing. And what I was confronted with is that, no, we weren't. There are people that were, you know, they're doing the postures. They're making the pretty shapes. But they are not doing the practice. Because if they were doing the practice, they wouldn't behave in such violent ways towards people that they consider like not as able or the wrong color or whatever. And when I say this, I'm talking about management as well. Yeah. At these festivals, at these wellness events, at these studios, you know.
So
it goes from the top down.
So we can't summarize what yogic practice is. I don't want to undermine it by trying to summarize it in a few sentences, but for those who have only come to understand yoga to be physical exercise, because that's how it's presented to us, what do you mean when you say the practice, like the inner work?
And this is something that this is absolute, and I really always try to make space for everything. Yoga, the asana, yoga is compromised of so many different levels. You have a yoga that is pure study, pure philosophy. That is that person's yogic practice, to understand the scriptures and the sutras. There are yogis that literally, it's a devotional practice. Mm. It is through actions and deeds and devotion. It is not, you know, and ultimately, the highest, what we do all of it for, even the asana, you know, there's a whole science of just a breath work, of breathing in these ways to access consciousness, to awaken this roly-poly, jumping up and down, everything. And I'll say it. Listen, I'm there doing it too. I love it. I love it so much. That is a pure drop in the ocean, yes, of what this practice is. And ultimately, we do these things so we can sit with ourselves. Sit with what is there and what is present so we can see.
Mm. So for me, thank you so much for sharing that. It's about this consciousness, this expansion, this awakening. And what I see from the outside, and please share your own thoughts on this, is that there's this bypassing that goes on in the spiritual world, that we only want love, light and rainbows and positivity, because if we focus on anything dark and heavy, then that's not being kind or positive. But if you're going into a realm of expansion and a wider state of consciousness, you've got to see that the light and dark coexists, right?
Well, for me, what you say is my practice. That you've just encapsulated my practice. Like, why I love yoga. Why? Because it helped me to digest some of the more difficult things. You know? It helps me to lean into it. You know? It really does. It helps me to lean in. It helps me to sit with it. It helps me to, you know, that this thing, and folks say it, and they say it, and they mean, but it's like, literally, the practice is no mud, no lotus. We can't just get the flower.
Yeah.
We got to do the mud. We got to work with the, you know, the stuff that is, you know, we probably, most of it is we just really like, oh, do we have to do that? And everyone in this, you know, and so much of this is like, everyone that I know some, like, I have some amazing teachers and some amazing yoga. It even just as a person, when you're doing this awakening, it's like, oh, is there more shit? Like, God, okay. And it can feel like that, but that's the thing. It's like, it's all of it. It's the whole human experience.
Yes.
And what I have seen is a real attitude of not seeing people's humanity in this practice, not seeing their humanity. And that if, you know, anyone is like having issues and really, really struggling, is sometimes people even flip it on you, like you're too attached to your ego, you're too attached, you're too the, and it's like, no, I'm simply being human. I'm simply trying to deal with, you know, the aches and pains and the knocks and bumps of being human, and most times that's not going
to
be pretty.
Yeah, and to me, this everything, I mean, to me, everything is linked. Everybody in the world needs to do anti-racism work, but the correlation with why so many people don't want to do anti-racism work because they think it's going to be pretty and fluff, and they'll slide into my DMs and say, well, you know, I've got this problem and I've got that problem, so Nova, can you just give me a checklist of how I can be a better ally? No, darling, I can't. You need to start by interrogating and looking at your darkness and looking at your inherent racism and stuff that you're not going to find pretty or easy, because when you do all that inner work, then the answers and how you show up in the world, it just becomes, it changes, right?
It does. And I like, and for me, it, as I gotten deeper into this practice of yoga and how it links with the, and I love that we just brought that anti-racism work in, how these, this practices that I'm doing have literally, oh, you know, peeled back these layers of white supremacy and white privilege and even my, you know, the internalized stuff that you have as a black and brown person, where I was like doing this work and it's doing this yoga. It literally is doing these inquiry. I was like, that's not right. That just doesn't make any sense. This is violent. This isn't, everybody can't be happy and free if we're operating like this. And it was these practices that got me to do like this, like, whoa, hey lady, this is what's going on. And so then now I have even more of a drive to be out there, to be sharing the practice and sharing the practice in a way that is an awakening process, but also an embodiment process. Mm. Because I think that there is this spiritual bypass. This bypassing is because people don't want to do the work, that the embodiment work.
Yeah, they get it cognitively.
That more muddy. But, yeah. Oh, you know, and this whole, and I've sat with my teachers, and there's lots of different ways of thinking, but most of the people that are here and that are out here, we're people of the world. We have families.
Yeah.
We have jobs where we have to make money to live. We're not some aesthetics living on in a cave. We're not monks. What are we trying to transcend?
Mm.
What? That's bullshit. That is, what can you transcend? I can't transcend my cardinal. That just can't, I can't transcend my daughter's tuition. Mm. I need to be here. I need to be able to be more in my body so I can meet the challenges of this worldly life.
Yeah.
And so when they try to bring, and that's a part of the bypass too, that's a part of the little trick that, you know, I try to help and untangle that with my students. It's like, where are you going? You going over there, you going out, like, this practice brings you more in so you can meet what's out here. And I think when we teach it more in that way, and we get people looking like in that way, then the other thing, so we can start to confront some of these things that are out. But if we just trying to get out and go off into the clouds, into wherever, it's like, we can't even have a conversation. Mm-hmm. You aren't present. You aren't here. And I think I see a lot of that in, you know, with, you know, mainly a lot of my, like, you know, white colleagues. Mm. They want out.
They're trying to escape or disassociate, which I'm understanding from the essence of yoga is it's the opposite of what they should be doing. Whereas they're using it as a method desensitize.
Light and love, high vibes only.
It's not real.
Stop being, you know, We're all one race. No, I don't see color.
Stop.
This stuff, you are literally, I was on a yoga retreat, and this was like a deep one. This was like, you know, real meditation and deep spiritual practices, and it was like wowza. And we were, you know, we were sitting in circles and we would talk. And one of my sisters, and I call her sister, she does so much social justice work and works with marginalized people. And she brought it up. She said, all right, let's talk about this racism and how it fits in and whatever. They came for her. And she's a white lady. And they came and they dragged her because she was getting away at a high vibes. How dare you? How dare you with so many serious high up practitioners in this thing start bringing that stuff in?
Wow, how inconvenient for them.
And I watched and I said, Houston, we got problems. I did. I said, well, see, good. I said, this is why I'm here. So I can see how deep, because you, like, these people got people. These, like, are like teachers that have flocks of people. And they're like,
they didn't want to go. Lady. There. Yeah, they saw it as a problem.
And then they called her racist for bringing it up.
Jesus Christ. Christ alive.
So,
I'm laughing, but these are really common microaggressions. These are really common responses to white fragility. Defensiveness, denial, rage, belligerence, going back into this childlike state. I don't like this, you know. No longer rocking the status quo. You will do as I say. You will do what makes me feel comfortable. And it is so violent.
I saw that, and I said, well, now you really know. Mm. And this was the one. This was the tradition that I was like finding so healing, and I'm like in real in flow. I started doing these practices with these. And my career was just taking off because I'm pulling back the projections and it's certain stuff, because even, you know, like the way I show up to big places, and I just look like, if this is, I'm out. So if you want me, it's got to be, you know, in a way. And so much so that, like, even in spaces where it empowered me. So these practices are not only empowering, but they're liberating. Mm. So it freed up this space to me where there was definitely a shift. And I said, I got to do something. Mm. I have to do even more. So, you know, I would bring up two places. I can't just be the black one. Yes. I can't.
And so you expressed that to them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would, you know, I would say, look, I got... And here are my friends.
Yeah, of course.
So, because people would like to say that we don't know anybody.
It's laziness. If you only recruit from your same pool of people who look and remind you of yourself, then you're going to keep getting the same type of people coming to you and applying, because that's who they see that you're presenting. It's really lazy, and it is that transcends across industries, acting, corporations in their hiring processes. It's the same thing. Oh, well, there just aren't enough. Yes, there are.
And so, again, this for me, I actively, you know, with this group, Yogis of Color, it's a big pool. We have like an affinity group where there are loads of teachers, different backgrounds, things where I'm like, okay, so we gotta come, you know. So they keep saying that they don't know. Okay, right. So then this is what we're going to do. We're going to organize and have, like, what is it that you need? Yes. Here are a list of names. And from engaging in that, you know, way, I have seen places go, thank you, and get in touch with people and hire them. And so it's not all, like, so again, I'm holding it. It's not, like, all complaint. Some people very well... They're like, they've contacted me and they're like, we see that you're black and you teach yoga. Can you come teach for us? Because this is what we want to have. And I go like, thank you. Here's a set of people. Because I came into the space where it's like, I can't be everywhere.
Of course.
As much as I would like to and as much as I can be. And like, so I'm going to use the little privilege that I do have to help open up the door for some other teachers. And I feel like instead of, sometimes I call myself the tick box because I have been, right? People like, well, we tick that box. But I've also changed the language that I'm a bridge builder.
Absolutely.
And that is, that for people that might want to be in these spaces for whatever reason, I was literally called to be in these spaces and I've just met that call, then I'm what I want to do is leave these spaces less violent than what I found
Amazing.
Them and less hostile than what I found them. In some places it's a lot easier than others because the inception of them being built is that they do want to be inclusive and they just need to know how and they need people that were willing to engage with them and that we learn together and we make the mistakes with together and we hold each other accountable. And, there are, quite a few spaces where I feel like they have done a great job with that. And I'll give places shout outs and that even is from the whole experience from the top down, who they have is their senior teachers. Who they have, working in the space, students coming into Absolutely. The space. So it all works together. It's not just we want to get more in black and brown people coming into the space. I'm particularly talking about black and brown, but I'm also, a middle-aged woman. And like more, middle,
more, just more diversity, more body
diversity,
types, more body shapes, more abilities, all of that stuff. And it's a holistic approach, and many don't approach it with a holistic approach, which ends up tokenizing. My bugbear is, if you don't know how to do it, just as you would, consult with an expert in any other realm of your business, like marketing or PR. Then why are they not consulting with inclusion?
Here we go.
Why are they undermining it? Why do they just say, Janelle, you're black and brown. Can you help? To an extent, you can run focus groups, but why are they not consulting professionally?
So listen, there's places they have been told. They've been told and have been told who they should go to, and they literally, for them, the answer was they did this slick marketing campaign, all right, which we know that's putting a cart before a horse, really. In this work, you really have to look at your systems and your management, who's on your board, who's pulling the strings, really. Because if you want to have inclusivity, diversity, and parity, like, it has to be in your core values.
Of course.
Because otherwise...
It doesn't make sense.
It's just...
And then you tokenize.
And,
yeah.
And not only... So, there was a really horrible incident in one of my... I've spoken to you about this. There was a campaign done with a studio, and they said, look, we see what's going on and we want to do a campaign around it to get, to let the world know that we are open for everyone. We think that this is important. And I was like so excited and so happy, and I'm like, yes, finally, right? However, it was put in the cart before the horse, because they did this campaign and I was featured in it. And I told my story about how people had been rude to me because I was black yoga teacher and the microaggressions and how that's, it is not right. And they even agreed, and like, oh my God, this is so great. And we did this fancy photo shoot and world-class photographer. Like, for me, it was like, okay, all right, so we're getting somewhere. So the campaign happens and whatever. And I, And I mean, I noticed that, like, I do have Black and brown people come into my classes, right? Because I'm Black and brown. and that representation does matter. But then there was a space with this company where I was being treated so badly by the students. And you're talking about this questioning. I was like, am I just going crazy here? This was my permanent class. This was my class. They have my picture on the thing.
No surprise.
People read it. Yeah. People read it. I've had so many people go, I came because I read.
Yes.
And I wanted to experience you. So I know it's like, it's no hiding. And there were so many microaggressions. People would say to me, I did not know what to expect when I saw you.
It's almost like they wanted to try you out. They wanted to fetishize you to an extent.
I didn't know what to expect in this. And I'm like, all right. You're actually a very good teacher.
Oh, thank you.
And I went, nah, no. And I had to go to them and say, that little marketing exercise ain't work. These people are hostile towards me. And it's not just them. It's coming from the top down. And that is that, you know, because we are energetic beings.
Absolutely.
And we can feel the energy of a place that they felt that it was okay to attack my credibility because I'm living in a Black and brown body. And what I said was, I've complained about teaching in this space for ages and you did nothing. I'm giving up the class. I won't do it anymore. And I haven't spoken about this publicly ever because I walked away from it and I'm like no longer living in London anyway. And it's kind of like all coincided with me, you know, like leaving and you know, sometimes you just have to make decisions about the best space for your energy.
Yes. And to not compromise yourself and hold that boundary, actually, I'm going to preserve my energy for someone who's ready for me in my work.
And so in all of this, they said, you know, can we meet about this? And I said, of sure, because I think it's worth talking about. And I left because of these microaggressions, and you need a consultant in here to do this work if you're serious about it, because otherwise, what you're going to keep doing is trying to put, you know, trying to look inclusive, but it not really being in the management system and the people that are making the decisions. And it's going to keep being confusion like this because you don't know how to meet this. You don't know how to meet this. And you don't know how to, you know, even make a really firm statement that these are the rules of engagement when you come into this space.
Boundaries.
This is how we want our spaces to be for you, for her, for they, for them, for our teachers, for everyone. And, you know, people know, but they don't want to spend the money. That's where we got to with that place. They didn't want to spend the money on it. They said, what?
They didn't want to spend the money. And this happens time and time again with D&I. When I say D&I, I mean diversity and inclusion. It's undermined. It's not valued. It's not valued. They'd rather spend bucket loads on search engine optimization or social media marketing. Those things, they have budget year on, year out. It's because D&I is not valued because people don't understand that that is intrinsically linked with customer satisfaction, outcome, and whether people thrive or thrive in an environment or not. And they've just lost you as an incredible talent. And they will lose a network of students.
And the thing is that and the reason why I even talk to them is because I'm like, this is about the next person that hopes to teach in this place, that aspires to teach in this place. And what are they going to get? Like, what kind of space is it that they're going to receive? And like, I was lucky enough. It's like, I could drop the class and it was really no financial implication of me, but it's like, look how jacked up that is. I've received racial violence I've had to give up the class, and there, no one said anything really. There wasn't like, oh, can we get you another class?
No,
like,
didn't care. Let's keep it real. Mm-hmm. They didn't care. Let's keep it real.
No.
And that's the reality. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. And sometimes it's necessary to tell our stories in public places so more people hear about this and learn how to navigate it. And also, again, serving from a place of love, holding these institutions, organisations accountable.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will continue. This cycle will continue.
It is this place of, like you said, not valuing. So we want to. So then we get into like appropriation.
Yeah.
So I can take from you, but I'm not going to value you as a person, as a being.
No.
And I see that a lot, you know, especially in yoga that comes from India. People are happy to just take
the good parts, right? Or the parts that they deem as
the parts that they want
trendy or.
But yeah, but then they don't want to honor the people or acknowledge the people that they've gotten these things from. And it is, again, it's played out over and over and over again in, you know, what I'll say is wellness. You know, wellness, spirituality, yoga is played out over and over again. And in my mind, if we're really doing these practices, if we're really doing them, then how can that be? Like, I am always so excited to reference my teachers and reference the people I've spent time with in the traditions and where you can get the information and what they are. And in a way to further the healing and the lineage and just this collective thing. It's like, I'm bringing this to you, but this is to get you to go there and experience it for yourself, instead of me coming into the space and saying, like, not acknowledging that I got it from anywhere, you know, which basically is saying this is mine.
Yeah, when it's not. Yeah.
And that you gotta always come to me.
Yeah. And that comes from a place of scarcity. White supremacy is coming from a place of fear and scarcity and losing power over.
Yeah.
That's what governs all of this stuff. Fear of a loss of power.
And it plays out so, you know, much where I also look at in these wellness spaces is these people with these, like, you know, one of my teachers, and she says it, bubbles of authority. You know, that they're the expert, they're the authority, and it's usually a white man.
I'm making a face.
They're the people. They're the people that's the expert. Their word is
the
even
word.
Better than the people who came up with it. Because we can't trust them because they brown, right? Untrust, whatever. But we can trust
the white
this
man.
White man
colonial
says.
Mindset, white supremacy. Oh boy, these are the kinds of conversations I live for. But I'm gonna need to wrap up. I am gonna ask you one last question, and how do you find calm in chaos?
Through my breath. Through my breath. And it is our superpower, each one of us, and that we can, the breath brings us into the present moment. The breath brings us into the space of pure source energy and potentiality. Mm-hmm. The breath takes us there, you know, and everybody can do that. Just taking a moment, deep full inhale and deep full exhale. Notice what's there.
Yeah, and just notice.
And notice, and then instantly, no matter what's going on, there's a little more space. Mm. There's a little more acceptance. A little more compassion, a little more love.
Beautiful. Oh, Janelle, what a beautiful way to wrap up this episode. Please, can you let everybody know where they can find you, support your work, join in with any of your classes?
So I am, I mainly in social media use Instagram and Janelle Yoga, J-O-N-E-L-L-E, Yoga. Facebook is more for like family and friends, but you can friend me on there too. My name's Janelle Lewis. And I have a website, janellelewis.com. Right now, I'm in a little bit of an in-between space because I've recently moved continents. So I'm in Los Angeles now and in quarantine. But I have been doing classes for charity, raising money for out-of-work yoga teachers through a platform called Fierce Calm. But you can also find my online classes on Movement for Modern Life. All of that stuff is on my Instagram, Janelle Yoga, and on my website, janellelewis.com.
Amazing.
So it's all there.
Thank you so much for joining me and also for agreeing to record again. And yeah, just for being a complete ray of sunshine in this industry and beyond.
It is always a pleasure. Nova, you are a sister, a teacher, a real support in my life, a real light in which can be sometimes a lot of darkness. So thank you. Thank you for you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you so much. Wow. Another incredible episode and some really powerful insights shared by Janelle on what she experiences in an industry that ultimately should be about our healing. It's about collective healing, and we've gotten lost along the way. Healing shouldn't only be preserved for white women who are a size 8. The most people who need access to healing are those who are most compounded and are not welcomed in studios. I remember doing a poll on my Instagram around the time I was working with yoga students who were trained to be yoga teachers or on their own immersion experience earlier this year. And I did a quick poll on my Instagram just to get a feel for how many black and brown people, how many people of colour feel welcomed and safe in yoga studios. And it was resounding results were that people don't feel safe, or that they've stopped going to yoga because they felt the classes were clicky, or teachers, they would notice the teachers would give corrections to everybody in the class who was white and never go anywhere near them. Or you just feel this energy, not making eye contact. These are all microaggressions. These are all the ways that you're made to feel like you don't belong. And if we think about systemically who is most impacted by ill health systemically because of exposure to inequality, on this podcast we'll talk specifically about racism and how that impacts mental health and self-esteem and sense of self. Our wellness community should be open and healing to all, especially those who are most compounded by systemic discrimination. You don't expect to go into a yoga studio or a wellness studio and come out feeling worse than you did when you went in. I always say, particularly to those of you who are black and brown on here, one of the biggest things we can do, most powerful things we can do to honour our ancestors is to allow ourselves to heal. And so it's vital that we find spaces and places like Janelle Yoga who are offering inclusive practices that are about yoga practice in its essence, about collective healing, that encourage self-study, that encourage self-awareness and curiosity, and don't bypass the discomfort or the parts of ourselves that don't make us feel good in favour of love and light. You can't deal with this love and light business, honestly. What Janelle is highlighting, and I just want to touch upon it before I let you go today, because this is another long one. I know you like the long ones. We've only got two more left after this. You'll appreciate this. Is how violent it can be to tick a box And this is what we're seeing right now in this Black Lives Matter movement with some corporates and people responding from a panicked place of fear rather than making conscious choice based on strategy and sustainable change. It's like, oh my God, we haven't got any black people. Let's hire somebody black. Without really thinking about what do I need to do within my studio, within my organisation, within the culture, so that when that person of colour, when that black person, when that brown person comes into that space, it's safe and they're not experiencing more violence. Because it's all well and good hiring, but what are you doing when, you know, if somebody is experiencing not only racism from staff, but racism from students, and it happens, I hear it from colleagues who work in the NHS, racism from patients, as well as racism from colleagues. Like, what are we doing to actually focus on this stuff on a systemic level? And that means self-study. That means looking at ourselves on an individual level. And that means being very transparent about what the culture is and what will and will not be tolerated and standing by that. The fact that Janelle had to walk away from classes because she was experiencing such microaggressions and abuse from students and got no support from her employer highlights what happens when we hire somebody to make ourselves look good rather than actually wanting to improve the culture of an industry or an organisation. So microaggressions... some of the microaggressions that Janelle spoke about that I just want to express upon, like, get curious. How many times do you get surprised when you see a yoga teacher who is black? Why are you surprised? How many times are you surprised or do you second guess somebody's ability because of what they look like in the wellness space? If they're over a size 10, 12, 14, 16, do you undermine their credibility because of what they look like and their ability to do their job? These are the kinds of questions we need to be asking ourselves in anti-racism work. And sometimes the answers aren't pretty, but if we don't know what our isms are and our prejudices are and how they lie in wait, because even if we're not expressing them verbally, they come out in non-verbal cues, and that will be communicated to all of those people who filled out that poll on my Instagram, where they walked into a yoga studio and the energy was off, where teacher bypassed them and corrected everyone else but them, where other students were forming cliques. Your unaddressed isms will show up as nonverbal cues, and that will impact relationships and outcomes. So my invitation to you listening to this, it's to get curious about what those are, to start recognising what microaggressions look like in you. We dive into this in huge depth on my online anti-racism course, because this is the work. Sometimes what we have to excavate isn't pretty, but if we don't look, then we can hire and we can put images of people and we can say that we're inclusive, we can say that we are anti-racist, but if we're not doing anything to actively demonstrate that and to actively self-study and self-interrogate, our behaviour doesn't change, it just morphs and takes on a different format. Anyway, that's it from me today. If you want to find out more about my anti-racism course, it is ready and available for you now. Head on over to novareed.com to find out more about what's involved and signing up. If you want to follow Janelle, please do find out where she's doing classes. She's got some incredible videos on her Instagram as well. She's currently in America, in the US, and I want her to come back to the UK. We need you, Janelle. Janelle Yoga, see what she's doing over there, and yeah, really just think about some of the conversations that we've had today and what you can be doing to be a better human being and to contribute to what a safe space should look like in a wellness studio. And it might go some way to explain why some people are actually enjoying being on lockdown, because they're able to access yoga in the comfort of their own home without having to deal with these microaggressions, which, you know, is quite sad in one respect, but also goes back to yoga being a study that was very much rooted around being at home and being with a family. So very, very interesting. You know what to do. If this episode has resonated with you, please leave a review. That is it from me. Join me next week for the penultimate episode, and I shall see you soon. Take care of you.